Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Philip Carter. Hey, Philip.
Hi, how's it going?
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we are here to talk about F#.
Yes.
Yes, which is, I think, one of the most underappreciated languages out there. Functional programming, and we've heard about it for a while. F#'s been out there for a while. So you're going to show us what's new in F# in Visual Studio, some of the tooling, and you're going to sneak in at whenever you can, reasons why we should pick it up and use it, right? We're all C#, some VB developers, right? Why would we want to do F#?
So,
make sure you get that in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of cool things that happened with F#. We shipped a new version of the language. It's not the most exciting update in that there are a lot of little features that were added, but they weren't like, you know, big headliner features or something. They were kind of nip and tuck, fixing up various parts of the language that people identified as problematic over the years and things like that. And it now runs on .NET Core and .NET Standard in RC form, and we're going to be targeting .NET Core 2.0 and .NET Standard 2.0 with a lot more stuff because that brings a lot more APIs, so much more of F# is going to be able to run on that, and we're super excited about that. But with VS 2017, we shipped quite a few updates to the tools, and these are like really, really special in my mind because they introduced a ton of new features that have never been inboxed in the product before, and the basically all of these came from the community. So we have an incredibly talented and really, really strong community that basically know the language in and out. They know Visual Studio in and out. It's actually pretty incredible how much they know about the way Visual Studio APIs work and that sort of stuff. And so they had this extension called the Visual F# Power Tools that had some extra features. And they began porting some of that stuff over to this newer infrastructure that we put in there. To sit F# on top of what is known as Roslyn workspaces. So which is kind of this common layer where a lot of features are actually implemented so that if you sit on a Roslyn workspace, you get a whole bunch of features for free.
And was F# on Roslyn in 2015?
It was not on the Roslyn workspaces layer in 2015,
okay.
No. So this is completely brand new. You know, some of the things that you're using, especially if you've been using the Visual F# Power Tools before, they may not seem new. But you'll probably notice there's a new UI, and they're probably a bit faster. Things look a bit snappier. The UI is a little bit just kind of cleaner looking. And more importantly, like the same really great UI that C# and Visual Basic have for these features, F# now has them too.
Cool.
Which is something that we've never had before.
And you get to take advantage of the compiler working in the background and the refactorings and the tooltips and all that kind of fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Cool.
So I guess first thing, I'll just show you how you actually get it on the box if you don't have it already.
Yep.
So this is the Visual Studio 2017 installer. I have Community on my machine, so I can just go modify. And in here, I mean, this is the workloads page, and you'll think, okay, well, where's F# in this?
Right.
Well, I've already installed .NET Desktop Development. So if you go on the right-hand side, you can expand this, and you can see some of those components that are associated with that particular workload. And I see that I checked F# language support.
So it's optional. That means it's not installed by default?
No. It will actually be unchecked by default. But all you got to do is go in here and check it by default.
Yep.
That's the same thing for the ASP.NET workload.
Okay. It runs on core.
It's the same thing for the data storage and processing workload. I'm just going to uncheck that one there. And it's actually checked by default in the mobile development with .NET workload.
Okay.
That's the Xamarin workload.
Yep.
Or if you're feeling like hunting through a list of components, you can go to individual components and you can look for it here. I think it's under languages or something. It's right next to the...
There's no search in that, is there?
Yeah, they got to get that in there. There we go. Okay, so that under development activities, I thought it would be under languages. But there's a whole bunch of different places where you could look for it. As the installer improves, like with search and things like that, hopefully, it'll be even easier to find it.
Sure.
And so let's see. It looks like
But it's easy enough to add if you don't have it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so you would just go modify if you needed to. But since I already have it on Box, I'm just going to launch Visual Studio.
Okay.
So... once my user settings are loaded. There's one other extra thing, or like definitely a pro tip that I suggest. We blogged about this on the .NET blog, but we established a new nightly release process for the F# tools. So basically, when code gets checked into master, it runs through our CI and all that sort of stuff, and it's basically at a point where it's fairly stable. runs through a set of other checks and things like that, and then a V6 is generated. And that V6 is then signed and all that sort of stuff as if it were to be inserted into the product itself. And like basically, it's the same kind of V6 that you get when you check the F# checkbox. But we have it as a nightly process. So if a new feature gets checked in and you want to try it out, you're interested in onboarding to a whole set of new features, which is the case today. You can go here under Tools, Extensions, and Updates. And that needs to load up. And you'll be able to find Visual F# Tools here. You'll notice this thing says Experimental. That's because I actually have something on my machine today. Okay. But so that's the actual extension.
So Experimental is that's internal to Microsoft. Is that correct?
No.
Oh, no. Okay, so that's the nightly?
Yes, this is the nightly itself. So you notice Roslyn Language Service, Experiment, like all these different things that say Experimental, Visual F# Tools like this. If you want to onboard yourself to new features, this is a way that you can do it. So I can go to Change Your Extensions and Update Settings. And if I click that, you'll notice I have this little thing that says Visual F# Nightlies, and this .net.mygit.org/f/f#v6. If you go here, this is actually the feed where we publish the latest version of the signed V6.
Wow. And so you can set up your extensions to be updatable on a regular basis, and that's different than the usual publishing a new one where it shows up in the little flag and the upper right.
Well, there's a variety of different ways.
Okay.
This one you can actually in this case you just give it a name and a URL. You click apply, and that will basically say, oh, there's this V6 that I could now use.
Okay.
And so what's going on is it then downloads the V6 when there's a new one available, and then it installs it in your app data folder on your machine. So there's basically two V6s that you have now. One that is in the release of Visual Studio location,
right,
where all the other components are and things like that, and then one under app data. And so we kind of changed the setup authoring a little bit for this nightly release process so that Visual Studio knows to go and pick the one in app data rather than the one that installed by default. And so what happens is later when there's a future update of Visual Studio 2017, we'll basically take whatever one of those nightly release V6s are, we will just test it a bit more, make sure everything is really solid, maybe make a few changes if we need to, and then it will then get installed in that other place where everything else gets installed when you install things by default. So basically, we have this really great process where code changes, and it's all out in the open, all open source, gets into a new V6. You can play with that V6, and then as you play with it, you're actually also kind of testing stuff out. You notice problems, you maybe make an issue, you say, hey, I noticed this bug, that sort of stuff. And then what you have been working with just gets fixed up and eventually finds its way into the release version itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not this huge wait of time, you know, between big updates to get a set of features that you care about. You can start getting them today and then see what they will look like when they're actually in the product.
Okay. Cool.
So then you just press OK, and because I already updated the latest update here, I don't actually have a new one waiting for me. But what happens is it will update and download it and then install it for you, and then eventually you'll get prompted like, you know, hey, if you want to have this thing installed, you have to restart Visual Studio.
Okay.
And then it goes ahead and it does it. But so I'm going to start creating an F# app, a really, really basic one. Let's just make this run on 4.6. I'll call it web demo or VS Toolbox demo. There we go. So this is just a simple console app that runs on .NET Framework today. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn this console app into a very basic web service. And I'm going to do that with the Suave web library. It's kind of a progressive library in that you can use the whole thing. And it has like a web server and a routing thing that you can do. You can set up API routes and that sort of stuff. Or you can take those API routes and you can sit them on top of another web server technology if you like. But we're just going to go with the whole thing because that's just kind of the default out-of-box experience.
Okay.
So the first thing you see here is just, you know, basically your hello world. You know, just, you know, let main. Main is the name of the function. I'm defining a function called main. It takes in argv, which is just a string array, because that's just kind of how main works for most stuff.
Okay.
We have the entry point attribute, which, you know, that's just the entry point of the application. And printfn is basically just printf, and it's a formatted print. So this %a basically means print whatever it is. And internally, it uses reflection and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I could change that to just be %s for a string. And this will actually give me an error because it's like, oh, argv is a string array, but you're expecting a string.
Okay.
So this is kind of a cool thing with F#. Like if you're doing anything with logging or things like that, where you really care about the information that you're writing to a file or something like that, you can use formatted printing with sprintf, which is a function which prints a formatted print string, and use kind of that type safety to then say, oh, well, you know, I'm just not printing random crap. Like, you know, it actually, the types have to match what I say they match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a benefit for certain people. But I'm just going to go ahead. Actually, first, I need to add the Suave package. That'd be helpful. So I'll go under Manage NuGet Packages and Browse, and I'll type Suave. And it's the first one. See, it's the little guy with the mustache and the bow tie. They got a cool logo.
Yeah.
So we'll just go ahead and install it. Need some dependencies, yada, yada, yada. Goes ahead and adds them. All right, we're good to go. So I'm going to get rid of this. And I know that start web server is the actual function that starts a web server, but I don't have anything added. So I get red squigglies.
Mm-hmm.
But I also get a light bulb. Light bulb says open Suave. All right, now I'm good to go. And notice I typed default config. Actually, I think I just, there we go. Default config. I'm already getting IntelliSense for this thing. This default config is this sort of, you can just, well, it's a default configuration for your web server.
Mm-hmm.
It listens on a certain port. It binds on IPv4, has a kind of a generic error handler and stuff like that. You could pass your own configuration if you want, but mm-hmm. we're not going to do that. And then the second argument to start web server is a web part, or basically your routes. I'm not going to go into the details of what web part means in Suave. That's just, they have that on their site explaining kind of the types behind it and why, how they get the types to all match and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
But what's really great is within the screen here, I'm just going to type some stuff, fill some stuff in, and I will have basically 15 to 20 lines and a web server already going. So I'm going to set it up as a get. I'm going to compose that with this choose function. And I'm going to have a list of routes. So I'll type path, and that'll be the hello route. I'll compose that with an OK of hello, folks. And all OK does is just return a 200 OK.
Okay.
And so you'll notice I type some stuff that doesn't compile. Things are kind of weird. Again, I get light bulbs, suave.successful. That's where the OK function is actually mm-hmm. defined. Get another one, suave.filters. That's where the path function is defined. And I get another light bulb saying suave.operators. And that's where this custom operator is defined. And so that operator, it uses some pretty cool type system stuff known as Kleissley composition to sort of compose functions between each other that sort of return these types that are context sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to compose them together. And there's a whole bunch of theory on how that works. But in practice, it just means you get to write very little code that's very expressive and saying, oh, well, you know, the path of hello composes with this output.
Okay.
And so I will just go ahead and do another one. We'll call it goodbye. All right. So now I have two paths. We'll just go ahead and start it without debugging, just so it's a little bit faster. All right, and then I'll go to localhost 8080. Oh, that's right, I didn't actually have a path just for 8080. We'll go hello, and it says hello, folks.
Okay.
And then I'll go goodbye, and goodbye, folks. So this is, I mean, this is super, super basic stuff. I mean, like, this is just spitting out strings.
Right.
But I've got 18 lines of code, including some white space and some comments, and I have two routes on a web server already running.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty nice,
cool.
I'd say. And so this is sort of one of the great things about F# is that, you know, there may be some extra stuff that you got to learn. Like, you got to learn that there's this composition, that there's these functions that are being composed with each other and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, I have four lines of code that defines my API routes for my web server,
mm-hmm.
and then I just have a function called start web server that takes in those routes as a parameter, takes in a function as a parameter to that other function.
Right.
And so this is, it's like this foundational thing in functional programming that as you use it more and more, you'll really start to love it. If you've been using link in C# or Visual Basic,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, composing different link expressions, that sort of stuff, that's exactly sort of the same path. And so if you find yourself loving code like that in C#, you will probably end up falling in love with F# because it basically takes that to a whole nother level. So this is kind of cool, but you get some hovers. I can actually do something kind of nice here. I can click on routes. I can go, okay, find all references. This is something that's brand new in VS 2017 for F#. It's kind of down here at the bottom here, but you notice this is the same UI that C# has.
Right.
So there was so much functionality implemented at this common layer. We didn't have to do anything to implement this UI. We didn't have to, you know, the fact that you could hover over this and see a little block of code that shows where it's being used, we didn't have to implement that at all. That was just done at a common layer. We got so much of that stuff for free. The other thing that you may have noticed when
the guidelines, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have these structured guidelines as well.
Guidelines.
Which, you know, you can hover over it, you can see that, you can collapse them. That's also that was only available via PowerTools extension that not everybody downloaded before. And even then it wasn't using the same UI. And then under default config, you know, if I were to type that again, right? You'll notice that it's using this sort of fuzzy matching. So there we go. I got it to die there. So diff a C, and it's already knowing to pick it. So you'll notice it's kind of hovering that C and stuff like that. That fuzzy matcher is implemented at the workspace layer. It's not implemented at the F# layer. We got that for free. Also, these filters that you see here, we also got that for free. Now, we had to add some glyphs and like associate certain things with glyphs, that sort of stuff.
Right.
That was about, you know, maybe 100 lines of F# code to do that in our tools. But you know, that's easy. Also, another cool one, I can rename routes because, you know, why not? We'll go to rename, and this is the Roslyn inline rename sort of thing. We'll call it app instead. You'll see that online. Some people will call their routes app. I'll hit enter, and that'll be good to go. And then I can rename that to, rename, there we go. We'll call it routes again, and we can go preview changes. And you can see the same preview changes window that you get with C# as well. This is like this is kind of a whole other level of F# tools that haven't existed in Box before.
Right.
And they're getting better and better and better. And especially if you're on the nightly release train, you're going to see so many of these things. So I'll just go ahead and close that out. And I'll do something a bit more exciting to sort of kind of really try to nail down why you want to use F#. So browse, we'll go to F#.data. Whoops, I can't spell. There we go. So this is a really awesome library that is used by, well, it's built by some people who had worked for Microsoft and worked on F#. They're now part of the community. They're absolutely amazing. And so this is basically a whole bunch of different data storage, data processing, data gathering, parsing, that sort of stuff inside of this library. And most importantly, it uses what's known as F# type providers. Now, type providers are, I mean, I'm basically going to say they are your way to get IntelliSense for data.
Okay.
Under the covers, what they do is you effectively pass a sample data set to a type provider. Say it's you're reading some JSON data, right? You could either pass a schema or you could pass an example. And then it will read that in, build up an object model that represents that thing for you, and then pass it to the compilers, and specifically the compiler service. And so then the compiler service inside of Visual Studio will allow you to get IntelliSense for that object model. So you could dot into things. So that way you don't have to create these sort of ephemeral types that exist solely for being able to deserialize into so that you could turn them into something useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just kind of boilerplate that nobody really likes doing. And so type providers let you just do away with that entirely. So I'll just go ahead and open F#.data, so get some IntelliSense there so I don't have to quite remember the thing. This is actually unused right now, so I could choose to just remove it, but you know, I'm not going to do that because I want to actually use it. So I'm going to put a little bit of boilerplate here that you should never actually do in real life. Never do this in real life. I have like my own generated code here that for using this API for the Washington State ferries.
Okay.
They have a rate limit and stuff, so I'm not too worried about having the string up there or anything. Like they force you to actually access it with your own GUID.
Okay.
But so I take the ferry to work because I live on an island, and to get over here I have to ride a boat. And they have an app that I'm not the most happy about. And so I had just been kind of curious
that
about
tells
like,
you when the ferries are and which ones have been canceled and which ones are out of service.
Yeah. And so like, you know, I know that I'm on a particular route. It has these sets of boats between these two terminals. And then basically the question that I want to ask is like, okay, what's the set of ferries that I can take for my point in time and where I'm at right now?
Okay.
And so I'm working on building an app that sort of does that. But I figured I'd show off just type providers for accessing a real life data set.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and open system here, just so I have this date time offset here. And so now I have this ability to build this URL out. It just takes a base URL and a little code. And then one thing that I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a sample URL. So you would package this up somewhere in a self-contained spot of your app. You wouldn't actually like do it like this, but that's fine. And this notion of storing these things inside of a module is also kind of a code smell, but you know, whatever. So I'm going to define this string. So we'll go schedule route sample. So basically, this data set is the intersection of schedules and routes. So a route is like this abstraction of there are these two points across the water that a boat can go across, and that's considered a route. And then routes, you know, routes have IDs, schedules have IDs, and there's a way to correlate them and that sort of stuff. So we're just going to grab that information and see what it looks like. So I will go ahead and create a string literal here, and I just built out the URL here, and we are good to go. Actually, I just realized I'm not using this date string in any way, but you know, whatever. I just copied that out from somewhere else. So I will create a new type provider here. So we'll call this schedule routes context because JSON provider, because it's a context. And I will just pass in this schedule routes sample string. And so it compiled, all that sort of stuff. I have this now type provider object. So let's have a function that gets the data. It's not going to take in any parameters because the URL itself is kind of a static thing. There's no input parameter to this schedule routes URL. It's always going to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a URL that you had to provide, meaning there was like a parameter or something you needed to have, that would probably be good as a parameter to this get data function. And then you would build the URL out like that, and then you pass that off to the context object. So we'll just say that the data will assign data to something. And we will go schedule routes URL. Did I not? Oh, I didn't open that. Here, let me. I got to open up my module. There we go. OK, and I'm going to pipe that. So this is a way of passing a parameter to a function in a Unix pipeline sort of style, where and I'm going to pipe that into something. And so pipelines are really cool. If you ever use Unix pipes, and you basically say there's this operation, I pipe something into an operation, the output of that operation could then get piped into the input of another operation, and so on. We have that as a language construct in F#. And so you think of like stacked link queries, you know, dot where, dot select, dot select many, things like that. You could do that with just F# pipes and just piping regular functions together. So you don't need like special functions to do that, just regular boring, plain old F-sharp functions can get piped, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to pipe that into the schedule_routes_context.load function. So there's a couple different things. I could do this in an asynchronous context, but I'm not going to do that just for the sake of time. So now I have piped it into the load function. And so that means within this scope, I now have data. And data is an array. OK, that's kind of cool. I guess I got an array back for the thing. So I'll pipe that into an array function. We'll do array.map. So let's just, we'll transform this into a array of tuples so that I can get some of the data off of it. Because some of the data I'm probably.
Are tuples new in this version of F#, or were they always there?
They've been in there for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. And just as an aside, we introduced struct tuples in F# 4.1.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that actually fully interoperate with C# tuples.
Okay.
So they operate across assembly contexts. So like, you know, you can dot into a tuple where like you can consume a tuple and just have that be an F-sharp tuple. You can pass an F-sharp tuple and have that be mm-hmm. just a C-sharp tuple.
Okay.
So we're going to dot into this X. So X is an item inside of that JSON array. And looks like, what's this? Says contingency Ooh. Something, contingency description. Description
route
sounds kind of nice.
That looks like real live this, data.
Yeah.
Sweet.
This is real live data.
Nice.
It's IntelliSense for data.
Wow.
It's pretty magical. And it's, I mean, I don't have to construct these intermediate types to do any crap. I just.
And while you were typing, the compiler went out and retrieved that and did that all for you.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
It's a pretty sweet feature. We have one for Azure, by the way. So, you know, you're doing stuff with Azure Storage, Azure mm-hmm. Blob Storage, you don't like dealing with these long names or, you know, whatever like that, you can just dot into it.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. And so we'll just go description. Yeah, we'll do description. So we got the data, then we want to do one last thing. We'll just kind of put that into a string somewhere. Let's see. Yeah, I'll just do that in one fell swoop here. No, I'll just make that another function because that's better. We'll call that format, and we'll do date. We'll just call it data. In this case, I'm going to explicitly annotate my types. So something you may have noticed that I didn't even mention is that I didn't specify the types for anything anywhere. Right. It uses global type inference to figure out what things are. But you can also specify types if you want. There's kind of a some people and I subscribe to this belief is that if you have a function which is intended to be consumed. You know, outside of whatever you're working in, so not just as an implementation detail, mm-hmm. but actually something that you want other consumers to have, like in a package or just within your own code base in different projects, things like that, is annotating the input parameters. And that's just kind of more of a stylistic thing, but I choose to do that. So what I've actually done here is under get data, I'll just hover over this. And you'll see there's a type signature that was generated by the compiler here. Given a unit, which is basically void, this produces an array of tuples. And that tuple has an int, and a string inside of it. So that's what my signature for format should be. Did I type? Yeah, OK. Format, and we'll go data, and we will say that that is an int string array. Okay, and so now I know what that is. So basically, I had to wrap this thing all around.
Okay.
I specified the type with colon. If I did not wrap this with parentheses, then what it actually does is it says data is a generic type, and then the output type of the format function is this. That's kind of a gotcha. So you can specify the output types of functions as well. That's just with a colon at the very end of your signature, mm-hmm. and then type stuff there. So that's why I have this wrapped in parentheses. In case anybody was wondering why. So we're just going to take this array of tuples and we'll just turn it into a big fat string. If I can type here. Again, we'll just map this over here. Array.map. We'll do fold. So this is a bit more of a functional programming thing. So fold basically takes a data set, so in this case an array, and then just collapses the items together into a result.
Okay.
So basically it applies this function that for each item in there goes in and just kind of gives it to this state that keeps getting passed in the implementation details. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that summing an array is basically implemented that way. Right. And if you think about it, that's basically what you do is you go through an array, you add to a cumulative thing, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. This is just kind of a generalized concept of that. So I'm going to fold this array of data into a string. So we'll go fun. So in this case, I'm going to destructure the tuple here. So we'll just call this schedule ID, route ID, and description. And so I have just kind of ad hoc destructured that tuple and given it a name mm-hmm. so that I could access those constituent parts. And I'm just going to newline this thing so it doesn't go off the screen here. And we'll go let str equal to printf. So this is similar to the printf one, except this does that formatted print, but it generates the string that mm-hmm. you wanted that format to be of. And we'll say schedule ID. And that's an int, so we'll do %d. we'll do route ID, we'll do another percent D, and then we'll do...
What's the backslash T?
Oh, that's the tab.
Ah,
yeah, okay. tab space. So yeah. Any sort of formatting that you may have done with C, it's mm-hmm. basically the same stuff here. There's a few extra formats that we have, but you know those are documented and you'll learn them. Description, and that's an S because that one's a string, so that's percent S. Mm-hmm. And then I will type schedule ID. Okay. And we want to go I believe this is what I was going for here. So I want to have an initial state of a string here. And this guy is generating the string. Did I screw up on my parentheses here? Yes. No. I'm having a little fun here. Okay. And we'll just newline that or something. Oh gosh, I'm absolutely stupid. Okay. Schedule ID. ID. Or why am I not? Sorry, I'm having a bit of a brain fart because it's demo mode and I'm trying to talk and write code at the same time. Okay, so string, all right. I'm using the correct fold function. Well, in the interest of time, let's just turn that into a set of strings because I don't want to try to talk and think at the same time. So we'll just go SID, RID, description, and we'll go there may have been some sort of scope thing where I was screwing up here. D. Okay. Okay. So I have now turned that into an array of strings. Right. So now string dot for no not format string dot is yeah is it join string dot join yeah so I'll just use a .NET function instead. Okay. So that's kind of another benefit of F# is that you can just this is a .NET function well sorry .NET method. And I'm just passing stuff in, and it all just kind of works. So in this case, format now takes in the data and produces a string. I don't know why I was having trouble with the actual F# function. There must have been some sort of thing that I wasn't thinking right. But so now I'm just going to wire that up to a quick path, and we'll
when
call that.
When it occurs to you 3 hours from now, we can put the correct line of code in the show notes.
Yeah, exactly. and so
right, that's always the way it works.
Yeah, exactly. So in this case, I will just call get data format. And so I've just kind of done this inline pipe where mm-hmm. I'm calling get data and I'm piping the result of that into the format function, and the result of the format function goes into the OK. So Let's just go ahead and start this without debugging here. Oh no, there were build errors.
What now?
What did I do this time? Right. Because capitalization, turns out that's important. There we go. Okay. So now the web server has started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, goodbye, it works again. Hello, it works again. We'll go fairies. And there we go. So I just have a data set here that, let's see if I can zoom in here. It wasn't the best zoom, but, you know, it does. Yeah. So you can see there's this schedule ID, route ID.
Kingston.
Yeah. So this is the actual data from the ferries in the Seattle area. So, I mean, you could conceivably take, you know, okay, given a schedule ID and a route ID and a description, correlate that schedule and route and say, okay, you know, these are the things that, I care about, so then I could pass that to another thing that says, okay, for a given route and for a given schedule, give me the set of departures that are going to happen at a particular terminal or something like that. And you could use the description to sort of throw that up on your app or something like that.
Sure.
So, I mean, even with just not being able to think while coding for some reason, I was able to spit out a data set pretty quickly here and not with that much code. Let's see, what do we have here? 39 lines of code with some comments.
Shocking. And 38 if you take out the date string, which you're not even using, right?
Yeah. Never do this.
We always do this. You can't hide your codes.
You are doing it already. I just, I don't want to perpetuate a bad practice, but so kind of, I hope this sort of demonstrated that, you know, A, you can use F# to do real stuff. Like, you know, there's kind of this misconception that it's for super smart people who only do math and science and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, certainly great for that. But, you know, here, this is just a web server picking up a real JSON data set and playing around with it. And in this case, I just dot into what I need. I format the data into a string. I mean, I could, of course, do more with that data if I wanted to. I could construct some types and then work with those and then, you know, build out an application, which is what I'm actually doing.
So are there people that build their data libraries in F# and then call them from their C# apps? Is that...
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a good scenario?
Yeah, that's very common. Typically, what will happen is, you know, they may have some existing code that was written in C#. They have a web service or a WPF app or, you know, something like that. And they say, okay, well, now we have this new requirement, which, you know, we could certainly do it in C#, but we heard F# is great for it, so let's give it a go.
Right.
And then they do it, and then they love it, and then they keep wanting to write more F#. And so because it's just a project, you know, just to demonstrate how easy this is, I will add a new project in C#. We'll do it a framework 4.6 library. Do you trust this source? Are you kidding me? Of course I do. This
you
my
got
laptop.
That on creating a new? I've never seen that.
Yeah,
that, when you created something new. I've only seen that when you open existing code.
That's interesting. But so
wow.
I can go add reference class library 1.
Yep.
It's already there.
Okay.
Did I click OK? Oh, did I create it as .NET standard? Oh, that's my bad.
All right.
So we have a bit of a point-in-time problem, which is, I mean, that's going to be coming in a future update, is the ability for F# projects to reference .NET standard class libraries and basically work bidirectionally in that case. And then we're also going to be doing some future work to take this project system that we have here and use the same project system that C# is using for .NET Core and .NET standard.
Okay.
And so as that becomes the future project system of C#, that's also going to become the future project system of F#.
Okay.
And I mean, I guess I could show you debugging, but debugging also works in F#. It's, you know, it's
not
too crazy.
You could write a PCL, a portable class library, using F#, right? And
then
call it from multiple places.
Absolutely.
Just to finish the thought, that might be the way of getting into this, right? Is focusing on a handful of things it does really, really well, right? Those bits of the app in F# to kind of get your feet wet without deciding that you're going to completely switch over everything over to F#, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can just create a class library and just stick it in your existing solution. Or as you said, a PCL, maybe So like these portable profiles, for example, right. these map to Xamarin profiles.
Yep.
So you're building a Xamarin app, you could have a library component in F#. You could actually write the UI in F#, which is what I'm doing today in Visual okay. Studio for Mac, which actually also supports F#.
Okay.
So I'll just open that up really briefly to just show you that it mm-hmm. exists. Once it loads, my machine seems to be having a bit of stuff here.
There
so there's this Fairies thing. This
so you
is
were
where
just showing Visual Studio Code, which has support for F#.
That
and
too.
And Visual Studio for Mac has support for F#.
Yeah, so this is a okay. talk that I'm working on, but yeah, there's, and so here, like, you know, getting, you know, some highlights, that sort of stuff, and under this Fairies right here, you can go this tab controller. That's the
so
one.
So you're doing the whole app in F#.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for example, I mean, this is just an absolutely dead basic sort of thing here that doesn't even really do anything except for allow you to switch between tabs mm-hmm. in an iOS app. But I mean, as you can see, it's less than 20 lines of code. And this is a UI tab bar controller, right. which kind of lets you go back and forth between different tabs. And you can launch it on the iPhone simulator, which you get. And so there's, you know, there's being able to click on that sort of stuff.
Okay.
That's 20 lines of code to get that hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice. So templates are definitely a work in progress there. We definitely want to get more templates out for Xamarin.
Mm-hmm.
Get some of this, like, you know, this sort of stuff right here, making sure you inherit the right thing. And, you know, for different types of apps that you want to do where there's different controllers, we could just have different,
right.
lay out the boilerplate for you. So then all you're focused on is, you know, okay, well, what's the title? What's the background color? What yep. children do I want to add to this UI view controller? That sort
mm-hmm.
of stuff. But it's pretty easy. I highly recommend people try it out. You know, this is Visual Studio for Mac, which is in preview. It already works today.
Right.
Visual Studio, it's already there. You can set up the nightly feeds, get even more stuff. There's Visual Studio code. I'll just briefly show, you know, there's this iNide F#. So this is a community project that mm-hmm. is amazing. They have a ton of features in there, so many that you'll probably think that Visual Studio Code is itself an IDE by using this. And so this, and because I'm running on Mac, it requires Mono, but if you have it on Windows, it just needs the F# tools and MS Build and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it, it gives you all sorts of really cool stuff. You know, some syntax highlighting tooltips, go to declaration, show symbols in file. It has the little Visual Studio code lens.
Mm-hmm.
It actually takes advantage of that and then puts type signatures in the code lens thing that pops up too. So
cool.
Yeah, it's really great. You can basically, whatever flavor of tooling you want, you can use F# in, which is great. There's also a command line, but I'm not going to show that. But, you know, .NET CLI, you know, .NET new dash, .NET new console dash lang F#, .NET new class lib, dash lang F# for doing stuff on .NET Core. It's all there.
So what's the best way to learn F#?
Best way to learn F#. There are a number of good ways to learn F#. One of the things that I would recommend is, we'll go docs. Interesting that type extensions showed up here. There we go. Ooh, the new header's there. I got the header color changed for the docs, so I didn't realize that. So we have the F# guide. So if you go under docs.microsoft.com/.net, you see there's this F# guide here.
Mm-hmm.
You can click on that. There's a couple of different things. You know, there's some links to external sources that are amazing that mm-hmm. we definitely suggest. Then we also have our own content. There's this tour of F#, which kind of goes through, you know, at a very fundamental level, what are some of the cool features of the language and why you might use them, what some of the code looks like.
Okay.
You can copy and paste this over and run it on your machine. We have a couple of tutorials for getting started. So getting started with Visual Studio, these are the kind mm-hmm. this is, you know, setting yourself up and running code
and
using F#
Interactive,
which I didn't even show, but that's
right.
That's
it
a REPL.
It also works with Xamarin Workbooks, right? Does Xamarin Workbooks support F# at this point, or is that
not
only C#?
No, it's only C# at
okay.
the moment, but
the
they are going to be adding F# support.
Okay.
They're super excited. I know that Miguel loves F#, so
right.
you know, he's going to want to add
it.
It
can't be too far away.
Yeah, and so then we have getting started with F# and Visual Studio Code and iNide. So,
okay.
you know, this is the setup. This is the thing you got to click on, like, you know, the name of the extension, you know, how you can use that.
Mm-hmm.
With command line tools, just using the .NET CLI. So you can find all those ways to get started here. I'll be adding a Visual Studio for Mac article here pretty soon.
Okay.
I've just been busy with other stuff. And then, you know, you want to dive into parts of the F-sharp language that are kind of weird. Like, say you're already on your machine, mm-hmm. you saw some code online, you tried it out, kind of worked, you're not really sure why, you don't know what's going on. You can go here, you can be like, oh, well, I saw this thing called async. Oh, gosh, what's that? Asynchronous workflows under F-sharp language service. And so you can go here and sort of get a really deep explanation of the actual language constructs and why things are happening the way they are. Another one that I highly suggest is F-sharp for fun and profit. And actually, I actually like the Gitbook more than anything else. I donated to this, so which is pretty neat. So this right here, so if you go ahead and read this here, this is a huge thing written by Scott Walashin, who is a longtime member of the F-sharp community, who, mm-hmm. you know, he came from like an enterprise development background. And so although this isn't the enterprise learning thing, it's actually like really fun and exciting mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. He's like, you know, oh, if you have used Python or C-sharp or Visual Basic or something like that, well, here are some common concepts that you know in those languages, and here's what it looks like in F-sharp. And so this is super, super awesome. Like, this low-risk ways to use F-sharp at work, highly recommend this thing right here. Goes through, like, you know, all sorts of things that F-sharp is good at and ways that you can incorporate it into your code base without basically telling everybody, oh, you got to go learn a whole new language to do everything, right?
Yeah, using it incrementally, picking mm-hmm. a specific task and using it would seem like a great way to get to introduce it into your existing code, certainly.
Exactly.
Are there... I know that when I was going from VB to C Sharp, I made good use of a lot of these. There were some tools or online places where you could enter VB code and it would translate it into C Sharp code for you. Are there mm-hmm. things like that that you know for F Sharp, C Sharp?
Maybe.
Maybe? All right.
I'm not aware of
that. Might be a good community project if somebody wants to write that.
Yeah, so I mean, one thing you can do if you're into it is you can actually recompile the IL that F-sharp compiles into, and you can recompile that into C-sharp. But it's kind of messy because you see...
That sounds kind of messy.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some... so you can go this... There's this place called glot.io. Mm-hmm. So if you just want to try it out in the browser... you can see F-sharp right there. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have too many things. Okay. Like there's no even like highlighting and things like that. Like there's some basic syntax highlighting, but I can go, you know, let square x equal to x times x. And you go printfn square of 12 is like that. I'll go ahead and run that. And it'll run this thing. To my knowledge, this thing has like a Docker container in the background, and it needs to do up that sort of stuff. But then you can kind of play with it there. So there's mm-hmm. there's some online playgrounds for learning how to play with it as well. There's going to be there's this Try F-Sharp site that you may run into at some point, which is like the Silverlight thing. That's going to end up getting replaced here pretty soon. The community's been working on having a much more modernized version of that, and it's using what's known as Fable, which is an F-sharp to ECMAScript compiler. And it actually produces really beautiful JavaScript, which is kind of...
Is there such a thing?
Yes, it is. like, the JavaScript that it produces is very functional and modern and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, it's this super incredible project. And they're basically almost to the point where they can host the F-sharp compiler service in the browser itself. So you can imagine, for a playground perspective, you want IntelliSense. The browser is actually generating it for you, rather than needing to go to like a remote server that goes and generates the stuff for you. So we're super excited about that. And getting the work done into our compiler service project so that we could support this Fable compiler being able to do that. Because that lets you use F-sharp to write web apps. And so everybody has to write a web app, and not everybody likes using JavaScript for it. And so F-sharp developers can say, well, I can use F-sharp.
Yeah.
So
cool.
It's pretty great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Lots of cool stuff here. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much.
Not a problem.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that. And we will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.